altcrypto.com.
Welcome to the Alti Crypto Talk. Digital assets are once again at an inflection point. Markets are volatile, sentiment is fragile, and yet innovation in smart contracts, decentralized infrastructure, and institutional products continues at remarkable speed. Now we speak with Nuke Nolan, Senior Research Associate at CoinShares, with a background in computer science and hands-on experience developing smart contracts himself. Luke combines technical depth with market analysis. My name is Christian Salo, and I welcome Luke Nolan from CoinShares. Luke, welcome to the Alti Crypto Talk. How are you doing?
Hi, Christian. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to talk crypto.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. Let's start with the obvious. We are still operating in what many would describe as a crypto bear market, not to say a crypto winter continuing. From your perspective, what signals should institutional investors watch to assess whether we are approaching a structural bottom and what could realistically restore confidence?
It's a great question. I think to answer that question, it's important to contextualize maybe what has caused the downturn, because we would be looking for the opposite of those things to be happening to find some sort of structural bottom. So I think to contextualize when we saw the shift from what can be described as the bull market, let's say early October to now, we saw this kind of dramatic shift in market structure starting on October 10th, which is, I think, the most significant crypto event in recent history, which was the day that Trump announced the tariffs on the Chinese rare earth metals or whatever it was. The news actually wasn't all that significant, but it caused massive liquidations in crypto markets that were pretty over-leveraged. So on that day, we had, I believe it was $15 billion worth of long liquidations and another $3 billion worth of short liquidations. That was pretty much the top of the crypto market, or in hindsight was the top. That caused some significant damage to the market. We haven't seen demand for leverage really pick up since that day. We saw a structural decline in open interest, order books noticeably more thin. Since that day, we noticed that from our internal trading desk, but also from the data that we look at. So one thing that you're looking for in a structural bottom is for those conditions to improve, because those have deteriorated since what was the top in hindsight. Another thing from a fundamental point of view, let's say the Fed story, the expectation was that the Fed was going to be more dovish, was going to ease financial conditions. That really hasn't happened. We've seen a pretty hawkish Fed. The appointment of Kevin Warsh as well was seen or perceived by the markets as hawkish. So I think a shift in the Fed's tone that they might be easing in the back end of the year could be something that is structurally supportive for prices. And then lastly, I think what we're looking for is on-chain indicators to show us that we might be having an exhaustion or a capitulation from very large sellers, which if we look over the last 6 months, whales have sold upwards of $30 billion worth of crypto, whales being defined as entities that hold over 1,000 Bitcoin. So when you have all of these sort of negative factors that have basically caused what we've now seen has been sort of the bear market, if you want to call it that, a reversal of those things would indicate that we're near a structural bottom. And I think we're probably not that far off. I think time-wise, it might take a long time to resolve. You know, we're talking more than a month or 2 months. But price-wise, I think, in my view, unless the data was to really change, we've seen the worst is over.
I personally have the feeling you are really enthusiastic about Ethereum. Where exactly do you see its long-term growth potential? And is it driven by tokenization? Is it DeFi, infrastructure, real-world assets, scaling upgrades, or something else entirely?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a little bit of everything you've described, but I think it's mainly a few things. So Ethereum's advantage comes from being, you know, the longest track record smart contract platform out there that's never had any outages, that hosts the majority of the stablecoin market. So of the 300 odd billion dollars worth of stablecoins, around 160 billion of them are in Ethereum. So it's the de facto leader of that market, which settled something like $40 trillion in 2025. So It's driven by, obviously, the growth of stablecoins, partially. But then when we talk about DeFi, Ethereum hosts the largest TVL, or total value locked, for things like lending markets or other, you know, systematic basis trades like Athena. But, you know, you look at something like Aave, which is deployed on a multitude of blockchains, but it really only has product market fit on Ethereum, hosting upwards of, you know, $30 or $40 billion worth of active loans at the peaks. So certainly stablecoins, certainly DeFi, those are the things that are driving the Ethereum story. But then when you look also at tokenization initiatives, you know, the real world asset market has grown something like 400% over the last 2 years. And again, the majority of that is being hosted either on Ethereum or the Ethereum layer twos. You know, obviously the most notable example being the BlackRock Money Market Fund. I believe it has roughly $2.5 billion in assets. And again, the majority of that is on Ethereum. So all of those things are sort of the long-term drivers of the Ethereum story. We have the political force of the Genius Act as well. The US is very pro-stable coins, which makes sense. You know, these Genius compliant stable coins do have to buy US treasuries. And so that's one of the reasons why they're pushing them so much. And again, we'd expect that the increase in stable coins will primarily benefit something like Ethereum, because it is already the leader in that segment.
In the pre-talk, you told me you build smart contracts yourself. Why do you believe smart contracts will become more relevant over the next decade?
Yeah, good question. So I think to start answering that question, we need to just take a step back and think of, what do smart contracts bring? Why are they viewed as sort of this? Why are they viewed as important? Right. So the number one thing they bring is predispositioned conditions that automatically execute when they happen. Their immutability means that once they've been set up, they can no longer be modified. They can't be intermediated. So what that brings us, especially in financial use cases, is settlement times get brought down from days or weeks, depending on what it is, to seconds, because it's just pre-agreed conditions that have been put or programmed into a smart contract. Cost-wise, you don't have to, again, pay for an intermediary. These are things that are just executing. I think the most sort of a trivial example would be something like Aave, where people can supply collateral and borrow against it. If you were to do that in the real world, you have to go to a bank, they'll do a credit check, and then they might allow you to borrow money 3 or 4 weeks from now with very stringent conditions. You have to sign a contract. While on Aave, all you have to do is put up your collateral and you can borrow against it almost immediately. So it literally takes about 5 seconds if you've used it before. So that's something that's only possible really through the use of smart contracts. So that's obviously a very trivial example. And then looking forwards, some of the efficiencies that legacy financial institutions might have is, again, I make reference to the BlackRock Money Market Fund. The settlement of that product in the traditional sense is usually 2 days or 1 day. At the very least, the fees can be sort of high because there are middlemen such as the clearinghouse and the settling agent and whoever is in between that. But through the use of smart contracts, the cost to the issuer is pretty much next to none. Once it's been set up, it's done, and it can scale to the size that it wants, essentially, with no additional overhead. So again, you get the immediate benefit from economies of scale from a smart contract that you wouldn't have from the traditional process, whatever it may be. So the possibilities are not endless, but they're pretty vast. Something else might be, the tokenization of a real estate project, like a commercial real estate project, where people that don't typically have access to these opportunities due to high investment minimums can now invest and reap the benefit of these financial opportunities through the use of smart contracts. So there's a lot of applications of them. They probably haven't reached the scale that a lot of people anticipated. But I think when it equally benefits the people that are issuing these products and the people that are using these products, then it's kind of a no-brainer that they will at least grow looking into the future.
Okay. I see a lot of cost-cutting, efficiency. I see a lot of automations and smart contracts. Do you see a combination with artificial intelligence and smart contracts?
I do. I just don't really know how that's going to play out. People talk about AI agents and this concept of where you can give an AI agent, let's say, a sum of money, and it can go and it can autonomously do a number of tasks on your behalf. I think we're at the very early stages of that. You know, I think for most people, that idea sounds kind of crazy and very conceptual, even to me. It's not something I particularly have done, but I've seen and read a lot about it. It certainly kind of makes sense because the AI agent, you want it to act autonomously, but also within boundaries that you've kind of given it. And so that's where something like a smart contract does make sense. But again, I think we're just too early on that to make any kind of concrete judgments about how that plays out. But it certainly makes sense logically.
Okay, cool. Let's come back to the classic. Ethereum versus Solana. Is it competition or coexistence?
I think it's objectively competition, or it has been for the last 5 years. But I think that that's more of a reflection of a market that hasn't matured yet rather than them fighting necessarily for the same exact thing. And the reason I say that is because if you just look simply at price action, you know, typically people will refer to the Sol ETH ratio as the sort of ratio of performance between them. And you see, you know, when Ethereum's performing really well, Solana might be slightly stagnant. And when Solana's performing really well, it might actually come at the expense of Ethereum. And I think that, to me, shows capital is rotating between these opportunities and maybe not seeing the nuances between them. And what the nuances between them are, in my view, and I think that the market over time will come to understand this, is on one side you have, you know, the slow, expensive Ethereum, and I say this quote unquote because that's how it's been characterized over the years, in light of something like Solana that's the fast, cheap alternative. But I think that makes them suitable for different things. And I think that the market that they're fighting for isn't big enough to where investors are nuanced enough to make that distinction. But I think that will change over time. How long that will take, I'm not sure. But to kind of summarize, I think they're competing at the moment, but the future looks something like coexistence if the use cases expand enough to where they can each, you know, do their own thing.
CoinShares has just launched an ETP on Hyperliquid. For investors who are less familiar, what exactly is Hyperliquid? What economic model underpins it, and how should institutions think about the risk profile compared to established assets like Bitcoin or Ethereum?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think, you know, Hyperliquid is mainly defined by its perpetual contracts exchange. When people talk about Hyperliquid, usually that's what they're referring to. So essentially a place where people can, you know, deposit stable coins or a number of other assets, and they can trade sort of an infinite amount of assets, perpetual contracts, which are just basically varying levels of leverage to trade, you know, XYZ number of assets. It's been extremely competitive in terms of spreads, liquidity, when it comes to its, you know, its counterparts, something like Binance or Bybit or OKX. And it's provided a much more sophisticated user experience. So people who typically use it, myself included, would say that the experience of using something like Hyperliquid is much more favorable than something like Binance. That also comes with cost efficiencies. The fees you would pay on something like Hyperliquid are significantly lower than something like Binance. And that is kind of the de facto what people think of when they talk about Hyperliquid. Hyperliquid is also a layer one blockchain, so the Hype EVM, which is basically just a general purpose blockchain, something like Ethereum, something like Solana, but it's extremely high performance, so the number of transactions per second can reach, you know, the tens of thousands in theory. Obviously, it hasn't reached those usage levels yet. But I think, again, when people talk about Hyperliquid, they mean more the exchange. What makes it so interesting from an economic standpoint is the platform generates anywhere between $1 and $5 million a day from trading fees. So its annualized run rate is something between $900 and $1.1 billion. And interestingly, or I think what makes it an interesting investment opportunity, is 99% of that revenue is used to buy back the token systematically each day. So I think overall, one thing that crypto generally lacks, and I'm referring to like sort of the majority of the investable universe, is a link between usage of the network or the application and ownership of the token. You own a token and not necessarily an equity share of the business. But what Hyperliquid done is much closer to owning equity in the business, because if the business does really well, they end up buying back more of their own token. So it gives the actual ownership of the token a fundamental value. And I think it's unsurprising that we've seen it perform relatively well in comparison to other tokens, especially in this downturn where it's held a pretty kind of significant level between 25 and 30, where other tokens have obviously faced a much larger drawdown. So it's a refreshingly different approach to tokenomics, which I think other tokens have now been relatively inspired by. So Uniswap announced that they're going to do some form of buyback from their revenue. Aave has announced some form of buyback as well from their revenue. And I think if we're looking forward, if we want crypto economic models to be sustainable, when you buy a crypto token, it should give you at least an indirect ownership of the business or the protocol that you're buying. Otherwise, the link is very tenuous and often speculative. And then it's unsurprising that in downturns, you face large losses as that speculative money leaves.
Is this equity-like behavior also helping you selling it to institutional clients?
I think certainly, obviously we've just recently launched it, so we've been speaking about it more from just a conceptual point of view, but definitely. When we speak to a lot of people, they come to us and they say, okay, but why is X token valuable? What actually gives it the value? And some of them have investable, investment cases, like something like Ethereum and Solana. You could actually argue that there are links between usage of the network and the token value. But for a lot of these tokens, it is pretty much a speculative premium. So when you're able to come with a proposition that actually speaks the language of an equity investor, where if they're buying Apple, you know, they're basically buying the cash flows that Apple generates. They're entitled essentially to those either directly or indirectly. That's what gives Apple fundamental value. If it gets too cheap, people will buy it. So when you're able to describe an investment opportunity in crypto that is also akin to something like that, it's like you're speaking the same language and all of a sudden people are very interested. So I think, you know, us launching it is a great opportunity to bring something that has fundamental value, and it's easy to explain, easy to understand for an institutional investor. And I think based on the conversations we've had over the last few weeks, I would expect it to be relatively successful.
Okay, and you structured it as an ETP, so it's a security.
Yeah, correct. You know, took a while to launch it because we wanted to give investors the best structure, which I think we've done pretty well. You know, 0% fee, and we're also giving back 0.5% staking yield. So that's, you know, first in the market. And I think we waited because we wanted to get it right rather than charge a fee and not offer the staking reward.
Okay, last question. Take a look in your glass ball. Where do you see the Ethereum market in the next, let's say, 3 weeks?
In the next 3 weeks? I'm seeing some early signs of sort of a relief rally, and I think we've seen some of that today. Some shorts capitulating. We can see that also from the funding rates going negative, but then we've had this rally and a decline in open interest, which to me looks like a relief rally, a classic relief rally where we've seen sort of extended downturn and then, you know, a 1, 2, 3 week rally where people think that the bull market is back. It's obviously always difficult to say whether the bull market is back until you have sort of multiple confirmation, trend signals or whatever it is, momentum signals. But I think at least the next 2, 3 weeks are likely to be positive, and then we reassess the signals that we typically look at that point.
Yeah, I wish that too. Luke, thank you very much for your insights. Dear listeners, the digital asset market remains volatile, but conversations like this remind us that beneath short-term price movements, structural innovation continues. Whether it is Ethereum's evolving market contract ecosystem, the competitive landscape among layer one platforms, or new institutional products such as the Hyperliquid ETP, the space is clearly maturing. Thank you for watching or listening, and see you soon again on Alti.
Alti.com, the online portal for institutional investors in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. Alti.com.